Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Suderstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, December 16th, 2013, and this month is just, you may as well say it's over. And
no, it's not over until you open the packages.
Is that
December is not over until you open the packages. So
I was writing some dates for 2014, and I was just like, oh, it's really hard to write that 2014. It's just like, why can't we write 2011?
Can't we write 19? Why can't we start with 19? That's what I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
I still have, look at 2014. How did that happen? 2014,
I know.
It seems like they were worried, but it just wasn't all that long ago. People were worried about Y2K. And I'm still kind of in that mindset. I'm still thinking, okay, we're going to have Y2K. No, we're not. We're going to have Y.
Do you realize it's less years to reach, or maybe the same amount of years, I guess it's less years to reach 2025 than it is to go back to 1999 into. What? I mean, that's weird. That's weird. Try writing 2025.
I'm going to change my name to Buck Rogers. It seems like I'm living in his century, so.
Yeah.
Change my name. Gets a little more modern, a little more hip. What's happening on the market today,
Well, let's see what century gold is living in today. We have gold at 1241. How's that for a century mark? Up $2.10 today. It fluctuated. We had a high of 1252 today and a low of 1233. So 1241, we'll take it today up to 10. You know, we're going to do this until Ben Bernanke comes out the 18th. Oh, I'm so sick of it. Are we going to taper or are we not going to taper? And how much? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? It's like, folks, it doesn't even really matter whether they do or whether they don't. The fundamentals for gold are the same. The fundamentals for the paper markets are the same. Disastrous. So I don't think they're going to talk about it. Of course he's going to talk about it on Wednesday, but he's not going to pull the plug on the taper. He's going to leave it to Janet Yellen's first major decision. So they're not going to do anything to spook the markets before the holidays.
Well, you know, there is one possibility.
What's that, Al?
Yeah, maybe seeing as Bernanke's going out, we can assume that he wants to leave with a pretty clear slate. He doesn't want to take responsibility for his last move of pushing the stock market down. He'd never outlive it. But There is a possibility that he might be said, all right, Ben, you're going to have to knock the stock market down, start the taper now, and Janet will take over with a clean slate. Otherwise, she's the one who's going to take the heat on this. Who is going to take the heat? Ben Bernanke or Janet Yellen?
I think Ben Bernanke on Wednesday is going to set the stage. I think he's going to set the stage, and I still think it will be on Janet Yellen's shift when they do start pulling back. But he will spell it out on Wednesday on how it will happen. That's what I think we're going to see.
And then he's going to be kind of blamed for the next
five or ten years
the way Bush is blamed by Obama. Is that what will happen?
No. No, Ben Bernanke will go down in history as the man who saved the markets. Whatever.
For a while.
For a while.
Yeah.
But I'm all just like Greenspan. I mean, really, let's really want to place blame. It was really Greenspan. I mean, he really began the easing of the credit markets and moving the rates down and so forth so many, many, many years ago. So really, it was Greenspan who really
It's hard to say where you're going to place blame on this. You could say it was Nixon because he's the one who closed the gold window and gave us a pure fiat currency. And laid the foundation for much of what we're dealing with right now. You could trace it all the way back to the onset of the Federal Reserve 100 years ago. I mean, it's the removal of gold. I mean, there's a bunch of people.
There's a bunch
of places.
This
has been moving a step at a time, and there have been a number of people who could be held responsible, but none of them are going to take responsibility.
Absolutely not. Right. Well, let's see what's responsibility silver took today. Silver was up 28 cents, got back up over 20.06. Platinum was down 2 at 13.67. Palladium pretty much unchanged at 7.21. The paper markets today, well, let's do the USDX today. The U.S. dollar in the basket of currencies was down 0.11 at 80.08. Crude oil was up almost a dollar at 97.41, and the stock markets took off big this morning. They pretty much stayed up there all day. You know, you have a lot of light trading going on from now until, you know, January 2nd, and then even that week we could see some light trading volumes. But you have the Dow up 129. I think the high today was 150, somewhere around in there. The Dow was up 129 at 15,884. The NASDAQ was up 28 at 4,029. The S&P up 11 at 1786. And the 10-year yield creeped up a little bit today, 2.88. So right now, until the end of the year, you're going to hear a lot about what to expect in 2014. You're going to hear about everybody who's making so much money. You're going to hear about all these wonderful, amazing comebacks, in the markets. So they're not going to do anything to dampen that. They need the year to go out in a. They need their fourth quarter to show some good numbers for reporting in January. So. Pretty much, I think you're going to see pretty much the same until the end of the year.
All right. Okay, what do we got, Melody? What's next?
So,
to taper or not to taper, that is the question. We're going to have to do a cartoon of Ben Bernanke as Hamlet. To taper or not to taper. Get that? I think so. What else do we have to do? What else have we got?
I don't know. What do you want? It's Monday.
Let's do quotes.
I got the Monday afternoon blues.
All right, let's do some quotes. Supply of gold has increased over the past 2 years by 180 million ounces. That's the world supply, global supply. As an increment to the existing stock above ground gold, the percentage works out to about 1.5% per year. The supply of gold, in other words, global supply of gold, has increased by about 1.5% per year for the last 2 years. In the meantime, the U.S. monetary base increased 14%, or at an annual rate of 6.7%. Now, how do we explain the fall in the price of gold? If anything, if the supply of gold is only up 1.5% a year, and the monetary base increased by almost 7% per year, we should expect that gold is at least, if it's going to keep even, it's going to, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of should have been up 5% instead of down. And that's from King World News. Got another one down here. It says, no one can question the fact that the demand for silver has grown exponentially in the past few years. Record sales for American Eagle coins being one small example. by record buying in India, another larger example. Demand has never been greater. Supply, on the other hand, keeps diminishing. Global mining production is at its lowest in the past decade. The annual consumption-production ratio is indicative of acute deficits. Whenever there is a situation where demand rises sharply, while supply commensurately declines, it is a recipe for higher prices, and usually much higher prices. This is true unless one is talking about the silver market. Under the conditions of record rising demand and considerably less supply, the price of silver is at its lowest levels in the past 3 years. With talk of silver going anywhere from $150 to $500 higher, it currently struggles to hold a $20 price level. Why is this so? The answer is not to be found in a myriad of supply and demand figures, no matter how cogently presented. As absolute numbers or dramatically presented graphs, and with so many comparisons to other times and situations, facts and figures do not lie. Politicians and bankers do. The reason why silver continues to languish is purely a political one. And insofar as we're talking about silver, we're also talking about gold. And this parallels, the first quote we had was from King World News. And we're talking about silver here, but the same principles apply to gold. And it says all Western currencies are issued by, silver, along with gold, compete against fiat currencies. All Western currencies are issued by central banks. All central banks are owned by the elites. New World Order, the money changers, call them whatever you will. These elites have a vested interest in preserving the Ponzi monopoly they've enjoyed ever since Meyer Ramshel Rothschild discovered the power of interest collected on debt over 200 years ago. And that's a quote from Edge Trader Plus. The point in all of this is, go ahead.
You know, we've been saying this day in and day out.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the elites who continue to do this. I mean, you do have the central banks, and you have to look at who the central banks are owned by. And they are absolutely right. Call them whatever you want.
Yeah.
But how long does their control remain
in
power?
There is the big question. How much longer can the manipulation of gold and silver prices be maintained? And anyone who can answer that, I guarantee you, if you can answer that with authority, the world is waiting to hear from you. Because at the moment when the elite, the central banks, the Bill Wall Street banks, whoever you want to point a finger at, the moment that the precious metals market stops being manipulated is the moment when the prices are going to skyrocket. Now, when is that moment, Melody? You're a woman. You have an intuition. What does your intuition tell us?
I will tell you.
Okay.
They will lose control when you have, if you believe, which I do believe, you have a fiat money system.
Of course.
And we know it continues. The government continues to grow. Inflation continues to creep into the system. I don't care what they say the inflation rate is. It continues to affect what we pay for things. Prices continue to go up. It's not a supply and demand factor that is making the inflation creep up. It's the fiat currency that is making inflation come into the system. And if we have a debt that can't be paid, I believe you will have the system collapse. It will break. And I believe just through people securing their funds at that moment in time, and it might take at that moment in time, is when they will lose control. And just like I believe they really lost control when we saw gold rise to 1900. They didn't lose control totally, but they were focused on other things at that moment. And I think that's why we had that nice rise, because you had the buying that they couldn't sustain, and the buying overtook their ability to control. And I think we'll see the same thing.
I don't know if it was just buying that overtook their control. I think what it overtook was their confidence. I think they thought they had it all under control, and even if gold rose to $1,900 an ounce, it was no big deal. They could still keep a lid on the situation. I suspect that somewhere around $1,900, somebody said, oh my gosh, all right, we got to stop this or the whole thing's going to blow up at that point in time. They lost confidence in their own control and still had enough control to push price down dramatically.
I don't know if it was because I can't imagine
we'll never know.
I can't imagine these people losing confidence, but I think they were just refocused on other things and they did let it slip. And you're right, they saw the price rise. And if they left it go to 2,000, it would have been at 3 before you could blink.
I think that's probably true. I think that 2,000 level was seen as a psychological point that could not be ignored. If it hit 2,000, even the mainstream media would have to jump on it and start saying, what? This gold has been phenomenal. And then we could see a real stampede to buy gold.
And you're absolutely
if we'd hit that 2,000 level, it would have had a psychological impact.
It was the same psychological impact at 1,000. It took a long time to break 1,000, and then you're right. It was the 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And if it would have broke 2,000, it would have went to 3 in a matter of days.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember that they cannot accomplish what they're doing with high gold prices.
Yeah.
It's not logical for them. You cannot have high gold prices.
Well, you know, but even that is mixed.
And low interest rates. You cannot have the two.
That may be true. That may be true.
It is
you can't
true.
Have high gold prices and low interest rates, but it brings out an inherent contradiction in the scheme. We've got incredible inflation since the onset of the Federal Reserve, and particularly since we went off the gold standard. We have significant every year, and it's the cumulative inflation has been substantial, and we'll get into that more later in the program. But now I've lost my track. What was my point, Melody?
You're asking me your point?
Uh-huh.
That's impossible.
You got that female intuition thing. You should be able to say, I think you were going to say this or that or the other thing. I lost my train of thought. Where was I going with that? I'm looking at quotes and looking at my monitor and yada, yada. Don't have that multitasking thing. You know, I can't do that. Can't do two things.
Well, I'm going to write the date down. December 16th at 4:18, Al lost his mind. I mean, his
train of thought.
Train of thought.
Not his mind, just a small kind of a senior moment. We're just
at his own admission. Okay.
Right. And if you lose track of your note, you can always call the National Security Agency and just say, listen, you remember the day when Al said he admitted that he lost his train of thought? And they'll say, oh, yeah, we got that. You got that on tape over here.
Speaking of the NSA, did you hear this judge? I just saw the headline, NSA spying violates the Fourth Amendment. It's like, so let me give you a whole list of other things that violates the amendments, and what are you going to do about it? So it was a U.S. District Court Judge Richard Leon found that the program appears to violate the Fourth Amendment ban on unreasonable searches and seizures. He also said the Justice Department had failed to demonstrate that collecting the information had helped to head off terrorist attacks. And it's just like, well, you know, we could probably give you, how many can you name that they're violating our Constitution, Al?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It happens all the time, and it's done under the pretext of emergency. I think the government declared a national emergency back in 1933 when they removed gold they declared a banking emergency, and they removed gold from circulation. And the emergency was only supposed to last for 2 years. And the reason this is significant is because under the pretext of emergency, the law is suspended. You can do anything that has to be done. Anything that's reasonable can be done under the pretext of emergency. And we'll talk about that, and I will remember it because I'm going to write it down here, see? And we're going to take a break now for some commercial announcements, and then we'll talk more about the emergency when we return in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What you got for them today, Melody?
We're going to continue the great specials. Prices are still the same. Prices are still higher than when we started. Mint State 63, $20 St. Gaudens, beautiful coins, mixed dates, not 1924s, but a lot of different dates that we have to provide, and it would come with a 1 ounce silver eagle, and of course free shipping for $1,550. And of course we have the $5 liberties, free silver eagle, free shipping for $485. Give us a call, and if you want them before Christmas, you're running out of time. We will express items for Christmas. We've been doing a lot of expressing to make sure folks get their items before the 25th. The last day that we'll express anything is the 20th, which is Friday of this week. And so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. You can email us directly from the website, or you can send us a question at questions at dgscoins.com, questions at dgscoins.com. And I guess we're going to be playing replays. We're going to take a few days off from the radio program, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th.
Is that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? When is
Monday,
Christmas?
Tuesday. Christmas is next Wednesday.
Okay.
And depending on what the markets do on Monday and Tuesday, I'm going to try to do market updates in the very beginning of the program. I'll try and do those live if there's any big changes in the markets or any news that needs to be reported, because I think that's very important. So we'll try to do that at the beginning of the program. But other than that, there'll be replays.
But we will not be expressing ourselves On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
That is correct. Oh. That is correct. We're going to take a little bit of time off and get ready for the 2014.
Yeah, you just wonder. It's like a newer and bigger circus is coming to town. It's not like you see Barnum and Bailey and they come by once a year. You watch Washington, D.C., and every year you get a newer and bigger and more bizarre circus. So we'll be looking forward to catching the first glimpse of the next year's circus starting in just a couple weeks from now. We were talking about emergency before we broke for commercial announcements. And the reason Melody had asked, she'd mentioned something about the Fourth Amendment and how it's been violated and sometimes routinely violated by the government. And what I was endeavoring to explain is that the government declared a national emergency back in 1933. And it was at the same time, this was the emergency that justified taking gold out of circulation, out of domestic circulation. The emergency was only supposed to last for 2 years. And so far as I know, it may be that no emergency in this country can legally last for more than 2 years. All right? However, government found it so convenient and perhaps even necessary to operate under the pretext of emergency from 1933 to 1935 that they said, you know, this is cool. We need to keep these powers because under the pretext of emergency, the law is suspended. You don't have to obey the law. What the issue becomes not whether or not what you did was legal or illegal, but whether what you did was reasonable under the circumstances. Right? You're no longer bound by law, you're bound by reason. And this empowers the government to do... It doesn't just suspend statutes and codes and local laws and whatever. Under the pretext of emergency, the Constitution is to some degree suspended. And the courts now are in a position to determine what is reasonable and what is not reasonable. The way the Constitution reads, it says essentially, thou shalt not do something. All right, fill in the blank. There are things that they're not supposed to do under the Constitution. But if we're in a state of emergency, the government says, well, we had to do it because it was an emergency. The emergency made us do it. It's kind of like saying the devil made me do it. We're breaking the law, yeah, but it's reasonable under the circumstances. Let me give you an example. Suppose I was driving 50 miles an hour in reverse on a one-way street going the wrong way in a school zone. You can imagine that if the police saw me doing that, they would pull me over in a heartbeat and say, "Baby, we're going to load you up with tickets. Open your trunk. We're going to fill your trunk full of tickets, Bubby, Buster." And that's the way most people would imagine. You can't drive 50 miles an hour in reverse in a school zone. Huh? But what if I pointed out, look, there's some bullet holes in the car, and somebody back there, the other way down the street there was shooting at me. And I had to put it into reverse and go the wrong way on the wrong way street and drive at 50 miles an hour, even in a school zone, in order to save my own life. Under those circumstances, my behavior is suddenly reasonable, and there's a high probability that I'm not going to get any tickets. Now, they may issue the ticket. The cop may give me the ticket at the point where I've been stopped. But if I go to court and I say, look, Judge, what I did was reasonable under the circumstances, the school zone law and the speed limit law and the one-way street law, they're all effectively suspended while I'm in that state of emergency. The same thing goes on with government. What has apparently happened is that since 1933, came up to 1935, the emergency should have ended, but we're in the midst of the Great Depression. Government believes that it's so smart it can handle things. And somebody says, listen, why don't we extend that emergency another 2 years and maybe we can get out of the Great Depression? And they said, good idea. And they extended another 2 years and then another two and another two. And before they were done, they had built up a bureaucracy that was based in large measure on emergency. And they were not precisely bound by the law anymore. The government could get away with whatever was reasonable under circumstances. And For government, it becomes increasingly reasonable to whittle a little way at the Fourth Amendment, a little way at the Fifth Amendment, and it's reasonable that we do this, reasonable that we do that, and they violate the law. That emergency, so far as I'm able to understand, has continued to this day. We've been living in a state of emergency for nearly 80 years. This appears to be a fundamental explanation, a fundamental pretext for how it is that our Constitution has been impaired during that time. We watch our rights slide and slide away. It's under the pretext of emergency. That's what they're doing. One of the points is that if we were to end the emergency, and we should, the government would no longer be able to impair the Constitution. If we were to end the emergency, if we could say, look, the emergency's over, it's long over, it's not an emergency. The only emergency we've got is a government that has decided to become a police state, a tyranny, a despotism, whatever. There's the emergency. They're not solving the emergency. They've become the emergency, and therefore we have to terminate the underlying emergency. If we could do that, we might be able to restore a constitutional government. If we could do that, we would probably disable some of the powers they're using to manipulate the markets and the price of gold, price of silver, even the prices on the, or even the index on the stock markets and so on. It's this emergency. It lies close to the heart of the trouble that most of us perceive with government. So, I'm not sure if, Melody, are you having any emergencies right now?
No, I'm not.
Okay. None you're going to talk about or admit to. I'm not either. I'm not having an emergency. So, what else do we have?
There's
something on the Federal Reserve. This was from Miles Franklin. He says the Fed was created in 1913. In the past 100 years, what cost $1 now costs $23.59, and that's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Truth be told, they understate inflation. Even by their standard, prices have increased by 2,259% during the Fed's 100-year reign. No, there's a point to this. And one of the points is, this is simply evidence that the government wants inflation. They want it. They've been doing it for 100 years, one century. As long as the Federal Reserve has been here, they have caused inflation. All right? Significant and considerable inflation. Loss of purchasing power of the dollar starts when Nixon took us off the gold standard and cut all links between gold and the dollar. Coincidence? Hardly. Again, I'm reading from an article that published at Miles Franklin. Just saying, look, when they took us off gold, then that's when the inflation really kicked in. You know, and you can calculate this yourself. When they took us off gold, price of gold was, what, $32, $35 an ounce in 1971, Melody? Do you remember?
That is correct.
One of them's correct. In any case, and where is it now? $12.50. Do the math. Right? That's evidence of massive and continuous inflation. And that's where it really started, is when we went off the gold standard. Between 1800 and the establishment of the Federal Reserve, there were only 4 years. That would be 113 years. Out of 113 years, there were only 4 years when inflation was greater than 10% in a year. Since 1913, there have been 10 such occurrences. All right, so we're having, what, 250% more years when we have over 10% inflation with the Fed, which is supposed to fight inflation. That's supposedly what they're doing. It's supposed to fight inflation. They don't fight inflation. They cause inflation. And it's just ironic that the Fed's, one of their objects is to control inflation. Right? Essentially stop inflation, and they don't stop it. They make it happen. That's what they want.
You know, what's funny is you can't control inflation. When you have a fiat currency, it's difficult to control. They can control the money supply, which affects inflation, but yet they need to continue to grow that fiat currency.
That's right.
I mean, it's not going to stop. So,
they,
you know, when you, you know, they can control a lot of things, but on the other hand, they can't stop inflation. It's going to happen.
It's conceivable that they could stop it. All right.
Yeah, if they eliminated.
Because if they do, they make the debt that much bigger. The whole thing is on a debt-based monetary system.
To truly stop inflation, they'd have to get back to an accountability, and the only way they can do that is with gold. They would have to change the complete monetary system.
I know.
And they're not going to change it because
Not voluntarily.
And in order for
they have to change it.
They're going to change it, but it's going to, in the meantime, folks are going to lose lots and lots of their hard-earned money.
Those who hang on to their wealth in the form of paper are in jeopardy. We don't know when the moment's going to take place, but eventually it has to happen.
And you know what, Al? I get it. I know people see the stock markets, their quarterly statements coming in. They got through the severe times of the stock markets. That, you know, the Dow was at 6,000. It came all the way back to 16. Yeah, they should be happy. But folks, take some off the table, because if you don't, you're going to lose it.
You're going to lose that, and you're going to lose the table besides.
Yep.
All right, that's what's going to happen here.
So, in our newsletter that comes out, American Survival, that comes out on Tuesdays, there's two little, in addition to yours and Lori Roth's articles, there's two little articles. One is, I think they're both from the, one is from Reuters and the other one is from the Associated Press. But the Swiss are going to try to reform the gold market to aid transparency. The Swiss government has approved a change in how data on gold trade is compiled in an effort to reduce abuses in the precious metals market. The governing Federal Council of Ministers, which includes the president, says figures on gold imports and exports will be broken down by country starting next year. The seven-member council said in a statement Friday the change is intended to comply with international standards and thereby contribute to transparency in precious metals trading. An AP investigation in 2008 involving visits to six bush mines in three West African countries and interviews with more than 150 child miners found gold mined by children was brought by traders to Mali's capital and then to Switzerland, where it entered the world market. So they're going to stop them, or they're going to, hopefully this will somehow help. It'll be a little bit more transparent, transparency in the precious metals trading. And, you know, we don't talk about Cyprus. We mention it in passing, but here Italy backs an 8% minimum bail-in for ailing banks.
You mean they're going to take 8% of the depositors' funds?
They're back
in order to bail in the bank.
It's there on the table if they need to do this. The Italy's economy minister Fabrizio Saccomanni said on Tuesday that public intervention on troubled banks should come after inflicting losses on bondholders through a minimum bail-in of 8% of total bank liabilities. Now, they're talking minimum.
But are they imposing the minimum, on the bondholders or on the depositors?
The introduction of bail-in clauses may spread risk across the Eurozone banking sector in case. Now, they're not doing it now, but it's on Facebook in case. So they're preparing. That's what they're doing. They're preparing. In case of a systemic crisis, public, so it would be the people, intervention would be preferable to the risk of contagion.
All that tells me is if someone puts, imagine they put $1 million on a table, and they set me there at the table, and they say, Al, now that you can, the maximum, we're not saying you can take, you should take the 8%, but the maximum you can take on that $1 million right now is 8%. What would you guess are the chances that I would take 8% right then and get out the door?
Yeah.
And be back, and when that 8% is gone, say, that's just not enough. We got to go for 16, maybe 20%. How about 50%? I mean, is the camel has his nose under the tent right now, and you can plan you're going to be living with that camel in short order.
Yeah. Well, he was speaking at a meeting of the European Union finance ministers in Brussels. So, I mean, it's coming, folks. I mean, how much more do people need to know what they're planning? I mean, they've tested it. They were successful at it. They're going to include it in various countries. And I also saw today, you know, we talked about Ukraine a couple of weeks ago, that the people want the government to join the European Union. The government wants to join Russia. And I hear the break music, so we'll have to continue this in just a few minutes.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Melody, did you want to continue with your line of thought?
Yeah, we were talking about Italy backing 8% of the minimum bail-in for the ailing banks. And earlier today, I saw where Ukraine, I mean, the people want to join the European Union. The government, the presidents are thinking more along the lines of joining Russia. Russia was willing to give them the money they need if they're just waiting from a phone call from Kiev. And Senator McCain came out and said, well, gee, if the government doesn't go by way of the European Union, the U.S. is going to play sanctions on Ukraine. And it's like, well, what right does the U.S. have to place sanctions on a country? I mean, what business is it of ours? And
it's an interesting question for this reason. Senator McCain is not threatening sanctions on the Ukraine because the Ukraine does or does not join the United States. Right? He is threatening sanctions on the Ukraine because the Ukraine does or does not join the European Union. Where do we get off? Where is our interest in trying to force the Ukraine to join the European Union? Anyone know? And the answer is, you and I and Melody, we don't have an interest in this. Our government, however, sees an interest insofar as people like McCain are more concerned with representing the best interests of the New World Order and one world government than they are with doing what's right for the American people. And as a result, we're meddling again in affairs that are none of our business. Huh? And how's it going to work out, Melody? It's going to work out the same way as meddling in Iraq or meddling in Afghanistan or meddling on the islands off between Japan and China. People are going to die because of our meddling. Not just foreign people, Americans are going to die. People are going to go deeper into poverty because of higher taxes, and that'll be because we are meddling. When are we going to learn to mind our own business? And the answer is not until the fiat money system collapses and New World Order collapses and we are forced to make do in this world with what we can amongst ourselves. I don't know how we hustle people, push people, cajole people, bomb them if necessary. We're going to have to let the rest of the world alone and we're going to have to take care of our own problems and work it out among ourselves. Until we get to that point, I don't know. We're going to see more and more problems in this country, and we'll see more and more problems until our capacity to deal with problems is finally exhausted, and somebody says, okay, that's it. Let's have an economic collapse, and we'll rest for a decade or so. We might not have much to eat, but we'll rest for a while and get our morale back, and then perhaps we can resume a significant role on the world stage. But any case.
Interesting. And again, just another sign, folks. Yeah. Everybody is grasping. Everybody is positioning themselves. And so it's another sign that things are not well in the world of finance.
No. They're, again, unstable, fragile. It's just laughable. Here's a little bit more from that article I was reading from Miles Franklin about the Federal Reserve. Let's see. Currently, the Fed's balance sheet is ballooned to around $4 trillion. That's nearly five times what it was in 2008. What that means is that the amount of debt being carried by the Federal Reserve has increased by five times since 2008. All right? In the first, that would translate into roughly the first 95 years of the Fed's existence, it ran up a total debt in the neighborhood of $800 billion in the first 95 years. In the last 5 years, it has added $3.2 trillion. You show me someone whose debt goes up by a factor of five in a matter of, what is this? Yeah, five times basically in 5 years. Their debt is increasing 100% per year. How long could you stay in business, Melody, if your debt was increasing by 100% per year?
Not very long.
I know. It's enough to destroy any normal, rational, reasonable business, be destroyed in fairly short order if their debt, no matter what it was. I don't care if you only owe $100. Right, $200 the second year, $400 the third year, $800 the fourth year, $1,600 in the fifth year. In terms of proportion, you get the idea of how fast it's growing, doubling every year. That's what we're talking about, or at least increasing by 100%. The point I'm groping for is, how is the Federal Reserve going to hold this together? And the answer is they have to pay off that debt with cheaper dollars, which brings back subject we talked about a little earlier about the need for inflation. They've got to have inflation. And all that means ultimately is if you're not protecting your wealth from inflation, sooner or later you're going to suffer a serious loss in purchasing power, which brings us back to gold and silver. Here's an article from Walmart. This is interesting. Walmart announced just in the last few days But you can now order from Walmart over the internet. All right? Just like you can from Amazon.com. But you can order from Walmart, and you can go down and pay for it at the local Walmart store in cash. Now, what that means is Walmart is making it easy for people to function without credit cards and without debit cards over the internet. Now, it's not a perfect solution, but it just impresses me that Walmart is trying to make things convenient for people who don't have credit cards, don't have debit cards, or at least don't want to use them. Want to pay cash? Fine. Place your order. They'll give you an order number. Then you go to your local Walmart store, give them the cash at the Walmart store with the order number, and then it will be whatever it was you ordered will be delivered to your doorstep. Think that's significant, Melanie? Is that just interesting, or is it confusing, or is it significant?
Oh, I think it's interesting. I mean, it's just a crazy world that we live in anymore, and it's, again, back to, you know, you talked a couple weeks ago about consumers and producers, and, you know, today I, you know, some of the things that Amazon is doing, yeah, we do know that that was all a publicity stunt for him and his drone services, you know, deliveries and all that, but certainly it's, they're all out there positioning to, you know, get as much as they can from the consumers.
Well, that's what everybody does. Everybody tries to grab every dollar they can lay hands on. And that's even part of the problem. We have become so scientific. And in terms of how people establish the cost point for product, businesses will calculate, how much can we make off these people? Will they pay $100 for the product? Will they pay $200? Will they pay $1,000? And they do a calculation based on this. They do surveys. How much are people willing to pay? And that's reasonable on one level, but it strikes me as different from the way businesses operated once upon a time. There was a situation where if a man created a product, he created a service, he sold it at a price that was fair to customers, fair to him, and it wasn't calculated on the basis of how much can I hustle these people out of? He looked at it and he said, well, it cost me $100 to make this product, and I've got some other costs involved. So if I sold it for $150, I think I could make a decent profit off of it. We don't do that anymore. We, at least the big businesses, they say, how much can we get? Cost us $100, you know, can we get $500 for it? How about $1,000? What will the people, what are they willing, what are they dumb enough to pay? It involves a system of values that you find when you live in an economy rather than a nation. If you live in a nation, you have a system of values that's based in large measure on morality. What's right and wrong? What's lawful? What's illegal? The nation is there about protecting those cultural values. The economy is all about the money. Insofar as government has managed to move us, move our consciousness and the way we think about things, do you live in a nation? Do you live in an economy? It's no longer clear that we live in a nation. The nation becomes increasingly irrelevant. The economy becomes everything. We've got to do whatever we can to support the economy, to defend the economy, to preserve the economy. And what's the economy always based on? It's a system of values that ultimately implicates one thing, and that's money, 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 and more money. And that's all. It's not about right and wrong. It's about profit and loss. It's not a small thing that we have moved from where we think in terms of a nation to where we think in terms of an economy. It's not a small thing where we have moved even from thinking in terms of a national economy to now we think in terms of a global economy. In the process of making that shift, we've changed our system of values in ways that are contrary to our national interests. And we're paying for it. We're paying for it with lower standards of living. We're paying for it by shipping jobs to China. It was good for the global economy. It wasn't worth a damn for the American people. we're allowing illegal aliens, even encouraging illegal aliens to come into this country, certainly encouraging them under the Bush administration and at least the first several years of the Obama administration. And even now, they're being implicitly encouraged to come in because the government wants to give them amnesty. That may be great for what could become the North American Union. It may be conducive to uniting Mexico with the United States and Canada eventually, and perhaps Central America, and turn it into one giant economy. But do we really want to live in an economy, or do we want to live in a nation? And it's not a small question. It's not an idle question. It makes a big difference, because if you want to live in an economy, then your system of values will only be about money. And what it means is people who make the most money, they will control this society. And if you're not making much money, your relevance, your power will be directly proportional to your income.
You know what, Al? I think the people have already made their decision.
And you think that decision is to live in the economy, true?
That is correct.
I don't know they've made a decision, but they've been persuaded to move that way because they don't see the difference. They don't grasp. Wait a second. Over in that economy, everything's about the money. It's not about whether you have an intact marriage. It's not about whether your children go to a good school. It's not about anything but bank balances. There's verse in the Bible that says the love of money is the root of all evil.
Isn't that
what we're after? Money is evil. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. That's very close to living in that economy. That's the economy is all about the love of money. The nation is something else. We have cultural values, a right and wrong, morality, completely different system of values. There's things you won't do in a nation that you will do in an economy. For example, dealing drugs. We don't want to do that in a nation. In an economy, somebody says, wait a second, you can make a lot of money dealing drugs. How about prostitution? How about topless bars? There's a lot of things. How about pornography? There's things you won't do in a nation that are profitable in an economy. And if they're profitable, that means they're good. Makes money, that's a good thing. This is a dangerous shift in values, and it's hard to communicate to people, but we have been lured off into that economy, and we're going to lose something very important. Cultural values, moral values, spiritual values. None of it counts. Unless there's money to be made, none of it counts in the economy.
Let me ask you a question now. When we look at our European nations and other countries, have they already chosen? Or because they've been around so much longer? I mean, we're only been around how many years? We're still establishing our roots, so to speak. But you have other countries that have been around a lot longer. They have histories.
It's a question of balance. There's always a certain amount of economy that there is an element of the economy in every society. It's not easily an either-or question, and I kind of presented it that way, but it's a question of emphasis and balance, and too many people are moving into the economy. We, on the other hand, have to save the balance of this discussion for tomorrow because we're out of time, and I'm Alfred Addis. Hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we'll be again tomorrow. And in the meantime, good morning. Frank, the producer. See you later.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.